Live.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, here we are, days away from the start of the school year for Roseburg Public Schools. Superintendent Jared Corden, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I know for anyone related to schools, parents, teachers, kids, very busy time. Get ready.
Oh, yeah. We're excited to start Monday, and staff are back, and we are looking forward to welcoming kids back in person here starting Monday.
So what will school look like this year?
Well, that's a loaded question, probably. We have kids back in person. We've got some virtual options and acknowledge we have parents moving that direction as well. But I think we'll have a sense of normalcy in terms of what we have normally done for school. We'll be 5 days a week in person. We will have masks, and we're still working through some of the recent mandates from the governor on, say, vaccines. But should get some updates on those today. But, you know, we'll be there with our families and kids in person, back welcoming our kids. We're excited to do that on Monday.
And what things will be different this year?
Well, I think in terms of what people feel in their experience in school, not a whole lot. I think we'll have what will be different as compared to last year is we'll have more of those athletic and activity opportunities for kids. We really want to focus on making sure we're connecting with our kids, getting them back, getting an idea where they're at, just making sure they feel comfortable. But that's something we do every year. And so I know it's really interesting. It's kind of a paradox we're living in, where we have significant concerns about the Delta variant here in our community and hospitalizations and case rates high. We'll continue those COVID mitigation protocols. We're trying to do everything so that as our kids come back to us, they can function in a less stressful environment in terms of just coming in and getting to work on academics and connections.
What about when it comes to things like recess and lunch, especially for younger kids?
Yeah, we'll definitely have those in play this year. There are some, there kind of has been this frustration with some parents that kids are masked up all day. It is mandatory to have a mask the current guidance here. But during lunch and recess, there'll be times kids will have those off and moving around. Kids will need that time. And so really it's going to be that, you know, we had at the secondary schools it was essentially a double blocked period of four periods a day. We have a seven period day. Kids have their electives, their core classes. So we really want to, we've really set this year up so far as we can predict to keep our kids safe, first of all, and have them have a joyful, rigorous experience back at school that's more normal for them than last year.
I imagine that you've gotten a lot of input from the community on the mask requirements.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I want to say the first day of that announcement, I think I had 300 emails in the first about 2 hours, and I think in my inbox I had about 1,200 emails about masks. And I think it's important to acknowledge there are people on both sides of this. We have our community. Some people said, please follow the mandates. Let's keep our schools open and keep our kids safe. We had other people, you know, really frustrated with the way that mandate came down, the fact that, you know, the government's telling us what we need to do, that are asking for more local control. So really kind of balancing those two and acknowledging those different perspectives. But ultimately moving forward, our priority is to get our kids back safely.
What about concerns about being able to maintain in-person instruction when you see this current spike that we've got going that is by far the worst of the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to acknowledge that the you know, we're in a spot where last year, you know, we were concerned at 40 cases a day and 20 hospitalizations. And, you know, you look at the case rates and we tracked them, you know, pretty often. We're in a very different world. The calculus has changed in that trajectory. It's on our mind. It's been on our mind, and we're planning on moving forward as we're planning on other adjustments we need to make. An adjustment, I would say this year we always have three or four plans, just in case. And part of that's been our planning process. If we need to adjust, we will. But we're going to prioritize on keeping kids safe and staff safe and getting our kids back.
It seems like whether it's schools or whether it's people in town trying to do events or even planning how to staff their offices, it has been that multi-planned approach where you've got to sit down and say, okay, if things continue like this, we'll do it this way. If they go this way, we'll be ready to do it that way. It's almost a sort of a nightmare for planners who want to come up with the best plan and move forward and toss the other ones aside.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the work we've been involved in, and it's okay. It does require, you know, what we don't want to do is be caught off guard. And one of the frustrations I've had kind of throughout part of the pandemic is oftentimes the changes that are made, they come without that planning component or communication component. What we're trying to avoid here in our within our schools is to make sure that we're planning for the unexpected. And so we've done that. I think we had a good chance of trying some different things last year, made some improvements this year in the event that, you know, there gets to be, you know, a lot of disease in schools or staffing issues. We've got plans ready to move forward with that. But we're not leading with that, and we hope we don't have to go there. But we do know, we do think that we could be on an upward spike, regardless of schools opening, over the next couple of weeks, and we'll keep a close eye on that.
With some parents opting for virtual schools, did that require more staffing this year to make all that work?
A little bit, but we had really, it comes in some ways as an adjustment. We're up about 400, a little over 400 kids from last year. We actually, if we take a look at, let's pick on Roseburg High School for a minute. Roseburg High School in September of 2019, we're up 200 kids this year. So people are coming back and they're excited to come back. We're getting kids transferring from all over the place that want to come, which is great. So we have had to hire additional staff, which has been great. We're excited for that. And the reallocation of some, there's been some reallocation of resources and some hiring for those.
So any idea on either elementary or secondary level, what percentage of parents are opting to have their kids in full-time virtual school?
We had a pretty, so last year, we, I think I mentioned this before, but within our elementary schools, we had about 300 parents that chose remote last year. And it was a pretty significant percentage. This year, with the plan to be in person full time, it's been much fewer than that. In fact, we had a handful to start with, but we've been averaging right around 15 to 20 families a day that have been adding into virtual as we get closer to the start of the school year.
So if that's happening on a day-to-day basis, speaking of planning, it would seem like it makes things a bit hard to do.
Yeah, but it's okay. We've you know, we're trying to think well ahead of the day-to-day. You have to kind of build this a little wider, anticipating some people can get there. And then you also have to plan for the other side, which is when we eventually see these numbers decrease, that also plan for those who have chosen virtual to get back in person. And so we're also planning for a migration for some parents likely to move from virtual back to in person once they're comfortable with where the disease is in the community.
So pandemic aside, if we can get to that point, do you see, though, with the virtual model having some long-term impacts where some people, for their kids, that's going to be the best model long-term?
I think some parents, I mean, some have expressed interest. I mean, we had a lot of parents last year that really thought that what we were able to deliver was as effective for their kiddos. It's not necessarily our expertise. It's not necessarily our training, but I think we learned some really important things, and I think there's a place for it for some kiddos. I really like what we're doing this year, K-5, that we still have you know, our own teachers that can meet with our kids offsite. We have a place for those teachers to be. There's a sense of community. Unlike some of the programs can feel a little more detached. In our secondary school, those kids can also participate in activities and athletics at the school level. And so some kind of braided program that like that post-pandemic could exist, but it really depends on parent preference and student preference.
It'd be the elephant in the room if I didn't ask, are you concerned about losing some staff due to the vaccination requirement?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the vaccination requirement was another, you know, relative surprise for us. We thought it might be coming, but it's important to realize that the rules for this really are still in development. You know, we don't know exactly what it will mean. I believe there's going to be a medical exception or exemption and a religious exception. So we're still, I think it depends on where the flexibility lies within this. And I don't think we're going to move to a model that's either an either or model. I think within schools, there'll need to be a third alternative. If we really want to keep our schools open, we probably need to have a third alternative where those who qualify for an exception with probably some other provisions for safety can remain. We're waiting, I'm waiting a little bit impatiently for those rules to be written.
Any sense what other districts are hearing from staff about this requirement?
Yeah, I think there's been initially there's a lot of, and we've heard from our staff too, there's been a lot of concern across, I think, the whole country where vaccines are required. I think people just need more information to make the choice that they feel like is the best for them. Could it impact staffing? Certainly it could impact staffing, and that would have a negative impact on our kiddos. I think as people have more information of exactly where kind of the timeline and the exact rule, how that looks and how it's applied, I think we'll have a better idea what that means staffing-wise for us.
Going to take a break. More with Superintendent Jared Corden of Roseburg Public Schools. When we come back, the interview will be a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. 1246 at Inside Douglas County from News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson coming at 1 on tomorrow's program. Superintendent Terry Prestiani of the Sutherland School District will talk about plans in that district. Superintendent Jared Corden, Roseburg Public Schools, in today talking about a lot of issues related to getting schools started this year. One of the things during the pandemic, and especially as we were just talking about vaccinations, is for those that are vaccinated versus some that maybe are not yet, or in the case of kids and all of that, it would seem like there's some scenarios there where it could kind of pull the plug on things in person in a hurry.
Yeah, sure can. And I guess to be more specific about that, the current guidance we're living under what's called RSSL, that framework from the state, and this was how we needed to operate last year, is in the event of a positive case in school, a fully vaccinated teacher wouldn't have to quarantine. They would stay as long as those COVID mitigation strategies were met. However, an unvaccinated staff member, regardless of those strategies, COVID mitigation strategies, would need to quarantine in the event of a positive case. That is hopefully part of that rule's being addressed this afternoon as we get an update on this new rule. If that rule is not addressed, that could lead to some pretty significant staffing issues for us that could put opening school in jeopardy potentially.
Now, the school board had a work session last night?
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. What kinds of things came up in that?
Well, you know, these work sessions are really good opportunities just to kind of rumble together with things that we need to dive into. Oftentimes, board meetings can really be, approving actions that are business related. And so on those months, we have two board meetings. We'll have a business meeting and a work session. So last night, there were two items. One was really an update on what's happening in our secondary schools to meet the needs of kids, and so we spent about an hour with that. The last probably half an hour was around updates on the current mandates. And we've had two over the last couple of weeks that went from local control to state control. Those are masks and vaccines have shifted back that way. And so I was able to give the board an update on that. And then the board was able just to discuss what thoughts they had relative to those mandates.
And as you look towards this fall, we've been hearing already in the last couple of days in the sports reports about, in fact, today, the beginning of the fall sports season and some practices beginning and things like that. What are your thoughts about those getting going again?
Well, certainly kids have really enjoyed being back together. We've seen all across the state and the country that the consistency of those remaining, though, is highly volatile with COVID. And we've seen, some schools not able to field teams because of quarantines, or maybe even just, you know, parents maybe or kids nervous about spreading or contracting the virus. So we're excited to have them happen. We've got plans to host all of our athletics and activities, and we'll need to keep a close eye on making sure we can keep kids safe. There's a possibility we plan for this. What happens in the event of an outbreak? And we'll move through that same process we did last year with quarantining and keeping kids safe. I think there'll be disruptions this year. It's likely we'll see disruptions just given the high case counts here.
And the sports season last school year was so confusing, I got lost at points as to what exactly was supposed to be going on, and was rather confused this week when somebody told me soccer was starting again because I thought it had just ended not that long ago. So it's been a little bumpy. And in the course of all of that, not only for the kids and the coaches, there have been the issues of parents and other fans. We had at one point there almost nobody, I think, allowed in. And then some of that shifted. What do things look like right now?
Well, I would say right now, right? We haven't opened
subject
schools
to
yet.
Change,
it is.
Yeah.
I think it's been kind of the last 18 months has been subject to change. But currently in the guidance, we'll be able to have kids playing indoors and outdoors. Kids can actually play without masks indoors and outdoors when they're in competition. We'll have people in the stands right now. And so I know it was very awkward last year not to have those traditional sports in the fall you expect in the fall, not to have parents be able to see their kids. It was strange for all of us. Having to kind of navigate some of the other, the outdoor mask mandate, what that will look like. That doesn't impact kids during the school day, but will have an impact, for outside games and things. So, we're just kind of rolling with this, trying to make sense of it and focus on the why. The why is we want kids back having these kind of opportunities. And kids and parents have been pretty vocal about that, too. They want these back for our kids. So we'll do the things that let us do that, and hopefully we can keep our case rates down and move back to a little more, a little less need for some of these precautions.
With that late basketball season, something I never thought I would experience was glare coming through the windows in the gym at Roseburg High and having trouble seeing something. But also there was a game that was either canceled or moved based on the fact that it was like 100 degrees outside, which meant it was 90-something in the gym.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been an interesting year as we've dealt with, smoke in the air and wildfires, looking at AQI as a new measurement we look at, and high temperatures. But here's the deal. We're going to get through this as a community. And I think we've tried to be just a beacon of hope. We are excited to get our kids back. We think we can do that safely. We're excited to restore some sense of let's get back to who we are. It seems like a lot of the infighting around political lines has really been a casualty of COVID. And we want to be able to take the higher road of just saying, let's work together. We have a lot in common as a community. And I think our whole community wants to rally around our kids and getting it back.
And my understanding is that you were able to speak to the governor recently.
Yeah, it's been one of the goals. It's kind of one of the items that has frustrated me a little bit is oftentimes Southern Oregon's or Douglas County or Roseburg's inability to get the table on some of these conversations about how to shape policy and how to think through some things. And so it's been good. There was a meeting with some superintendents, mostly the Metro District superintendents. I was able to visit about some things I think that she needs to think about in terms of how to make things work better for our schools and kids. And it's been good being part of those conversations, and hopefully we can start shaping a little bit more in terms of how those policies and procedures happen.
How do you think overall, we talked about some of the other issues that are at the forefront, but overall, how are the staff doing getting ready for the school year?
Overall, I'm just super, super impressed with the staff. I had a chance to meet with all of them virtually early this week. They're getting ready. I've been out in schools this week. There's just an overall excitement. People are just really excited to get their kids back. There's pockets of nervousness. How is this going to work? What is it going to look like if? But we're able to address those, and overall the vibe is really positive, and we're excited for a good start here Monday.
And is everybody starting on Monday, or is it a gradual?
Our elementary schools are starting Monday, and our secondary schools will start 6th and 9th graders, kind of as they start in that new space. And then actually on Tuesday, we're going to have 6th, 7th, 9th, 10th on Tuesday. Why? Because those kids that typically get that first go at the high school by themselves or middle school by themselves. They didn't get a chance to do it last year. And so we'll have a bit of a slow start at the, or a staggered start at the middle school Wednesday. All kiddos are on campus, and we're off and running for the school year.
Superintendent Jared Corden at Roseburg Public Schools, thanks for coming in.
Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
1257.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.